Welcome to Virtual Economy, a podcast about the business of games for the rest of us. We're your hosts. I'm Michael Footer.
And I'm Amanda Farrow.
On each episode, we'll bring you analysis of the biggest business beats in video gaming news. This is episode 186 and the start of season 6 on a live service. Dun dun dun!
All right, if you didn't do that, I was going to do it. So I very nearly got to the point where that was what I was going to do. So I'm glad you did it. Anyway, welcome to season 6.
Welcome to season 6.
Can you believe that we've been doing this for nearly 5 years? It'll be 5 years in March.
Yeah. So season 1 was 2020. Season 2 was 21. 3 was 22. 4 mm-hmm. was 23. 5 was 24. 6 is 25.
Yeah.
We did it. We had an abbreviated season 1 since we started in March.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure if you would call season 1 abbreviated because we recorded.
Yeah, we recorded every day for the first week and then 3 times the second. It was a lot.
It was a lot, but it was fun.
Don't forget the infamous episode 0.
We did that to screw ourselves over.
Yeah.
Past us. My God.
So dumb.
So silly. We were the silliest. We had the silliest pants.
Yep.
But we're back.
We're back, and so is the game industry. Well, at least in terms of generating news, it has not been a slow start to the year.
No. I don't think it's been a slow start to the year, period, quite frankly. Yeah. Not even just in games.
I mean, everything's on fire. It's only going to get worse. Literally on fire and metaphorically on fire. First of all, huge shout out to our friends in the Los Angeles area who have all been affected in one way, shape, or form by the wildfires that have been plaguing that area. We have friends who have literally lost everything. It's absolutely miserable. I know that there's an Itch bundle that's being put together to support. There are a number of charities that are pulling together donations, money, books for children, especially children who lost their entire collection of books.
Yeah.
So keep your eyes out.
Don't donate clothing, whatever you do.
Oh my God, goodness. I've seen the pictures.
Don't donate clothing.
Because people
Please
have
don't.
Been donating things they shouldn't donate. Like ripped
if you
stuff,
wouldn't,
soiled stuff. Like,
if
on.
You wouldn't use it, if you were in crisis, don't send it to people who are currently in crisis. Like that is no good.
Yep. Money always helps, but just make sure you're donating to an authorized charity to make sure that your donations get to the people who need them.
Or donate to individual GoFundMes. There's a lot of them out there right now.
Yes, absolutely.
But yeah, that's what's going on here in the U.S. other than, T-minus 2 days. We're sitting here at the 18th of January. We got 2 days until
things get
the administration changes.
Yeah,
that's that's probably the most euphemistic way that I can put it as a quote unquote foreign national. So,
yep. But this is a podcast about the business of games, and
that's what we're going to talk about.
That's what we're going to talk about. Specifically, we're kicking off with the biggest announcement of the week and the year so far. Nintendo has finally pulled the curtain back just a little bit on what it is calling the Switch 2. And there's a lot of things to talk about here.
There are.
The reveal seems, whether they were planning to reveal it, in January or not, the number of leaks may or may not have forced their hand.
It seems like it might have, a little bit.
It was a 2 minute and change little teaser that really just showed off the hardware and a single game. We will know more on April 2nd. Which is when a full Nintendo Direct. So we have a 3 month wait between this confirmation of the name, mm-hmm. the logo, mm-hmm. some of the key features, mm-hmm. and when we find out more. Let's run through some of what we know.
So what we do know about the incoming Switch is the form factor has changed.
A little.
A little bit.
Not
in an unfamiliar way.
No.
I think that after the success that Valve has enjoyed with the Steam Deck has, it might have influenced Nintendo to take a look and be like, okay, well, how can we introduce a bigger screen?
Mm-hmm.
without losing the form factor that fans so like. Now, one of the things that makes the Switch so popular is that it is easy to hold. Mm-hmm. Not everybody wants to hold a Steam Deck, says the woman who got a gaming pillow situation so that she she doesn't have to hold her Steam Deck anymore because my hands go numb if I hold on to it too long.
And for me, the Switch is a little small and uncomfortable. So I picked up Skull and Company's grip case, and then I picked up their smaller version of that, which makes it easier. You can slide the Joy-Cons in and out. If you have a hard time, and I was talking to someone on Blue Sky who had a hard time because it just was uncomfortable for them, just like it was uncomfortable for me to hold the Switch naked.
The naked Switch.
Like, there are going to be options, and we know that at CES, Genki had what it, you know, claimed was a mock-up of the actual Switch's size. Big fan of Genki's products. Nintendo clearly was not super thrilled with that. But after CES, like, again, another thing that may have forced their hand, the fact that CES came and went, and there were accessory manufacturers who were showing off Switch 2 accessories before the thing had even been announced.
Yeah. And I mean, we knew it was coming.
Yes.
We've known.
Yeah, we have known for quite a while.
We have known. So what are some of the other highlights about the form factor that has changed?
So there's an additional USB-C port on the top now.
Indeed.
There is a button. It looks to be a button on the right Joy-Con that some are suggesting might be a mini trackpad, similar to one of the PC handhelds that exists.
Mario Paint 2.
Well, yes. It looks like, again, what they were showing was potentially using the Joy-Cons, that there may be sensors on the where the buttons are, where it connects to the screen, that maybe may help it be used as a mouse. Additionally, they made a point of wiggling the thumbsticks.
They did. I think it's to demonstrate the fact that they have listened to controller drift, mm-hmm. because there were a lot of issues especially with the original Nintendo Switch Joy-Cons.
Yes.
Where the drift, especially on the left one,
yes.
was really bad.
So it is very possible that they are using Hall Effect sticks. Hall Effect sticks eliminate the stick drift because they use magnets instead of the traditional thing where you can have wear, mm-hmm. which is what causes stick drift.
100%.
The magnetization, I think that is where people have expressed some concern about it being a point of failure potentially. There is a male connector that sticks out from the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And while this does prevent you from accidentally putting the wrong Joy-Con on the wrong side, or more, it's usually a problem if you slip on the those button attachments that came with the strap.
Yeah.
There is some concern that that will be a point of failure and may cause some breakage, especially
understandably.
If you break a Joy-Con, you can easily replace a Joy-Con. They're all interchangeable,
mm-hmm.
right? If you do something to the main housing of it, that's a problem.
Right. And we actually found this out firsthand because our youngest.
Yes.
Rather, our two youngest children mm-hmm. were messing around when we were on vacation in the summertime, and we had a Joy-Con mishap.
Yes.
But we could slide the Joy-Con off, took a little bit of effort, yes. but we took it off, we replaced it, was no big deal. Now, I know that there was a lot of, not even necessarily concern, but like some sadness about the fact that the Joy-Cons will no longer slide in and
they've
click.
Actually changed the sound effect from the snap to a clap, which is very interesting. And they showed the new version of the puppy dog dock,
mm-hmm.
Where how you slide them in. There is some hope that there are going to be some improved ways to connect switches for local LAN play.
That'll be really nice.
And additionally, some additional ways to more easily connect Joy-Cons to other switches. Now, I didn't ever find that a problem. You just slide it on and it immediately connects.
It just pairs, yeah.
I'd never found a whole lot of success with the wireless pairing.
No.
Whenever I needed to pair things, I just slid them onto the
We had a ton of problems with that with each of our switches because, again, when we go on vacations, when we go somewhere with the kids, mm-hmm. we'll usually bring the switches and we'll all play together.
Yep. Let's see what else. There's the new stand.
The stand is really nice.
The fact that it is, you know, it seems to be dynamic.
Multiple points of articulation.
Yes.
Which I think is really nice. The new dock mm-hmm. is really interesting looking. It's got a very curved form factor. I mean, honestly, overall, the thing that is going to really sell the new Switch, the Switch 2, is going to be the software.
Yep. And the fact that it is almost fully backwards compatible.
Indeed. That's
huge. There's a caveat
huge.
There. We don't know. I mean, look, when you are releasing a new piece of hardware that has backwards compatibility, legal, I'm sure legal is like, let's put a caveat on there because just in case some game in the library doesn't work, we don't want to commit that every single game is going to work.
Yeah, exactly.
So that is being sensitive to consumers, and that's both physical and digital games. So obviously you would expect digital, but Nintendo has a history of when it
changing form factor,
changing the size, you know, or the, you know, the ability, you know, those cartridges.
The last time that they were this good about physical media was the DS,
yes.
Right? The DS was, for the most part, fairly backwards compatible, where you could use the same DS games that you had used all the way throughout, including with the 3DS.
Mm-hmm. And you could pop in on the DS a GBA cart.
Yeah,
and
the original.
A regular Game Boy cart as well. Like, they used to be really good about it. We did see some grousing online about the form factor and the fact that it was called Switch 2. This is Nintendo's first sequel console, effectively. You went from Nintendo to Super Nintendo. You went from Wii to Wii U. You went from DS to 3DS, but they've never done a 2.
They've never done a 2.
So this is this being the Switch 2 has had people lamenting that it's not, quote, weird Nintendo.
I think that, okay, so while I hear that, and everyone is entitled to their opinions, mm-hmm. and everyone is entitled to, like, the things that they wished would have happened, I think that this was a really important strategic decision for Nintendo.
Absolutely.
Because this was, the Switch, obviously, was the best-selling console for a number of years via Circana. Like,
and it's one of the best-selling consoles in history.
Of all time.
Because it marries both the handheld, like Nintendo's handheld dominance, which it had from the Game Boy through the Game Boy Advance to the DS to the 3DS, with being a home console, allowing people to sit on the couch and play by themselves with friends.
Absolutely.
You know, you want to play Mario Party, you just need one Switch, pop it in the dock, hand everybody a Joy-Con, and boom, you're good to go.
Exactly. And I think that it would have been a mistake to move too far away from that form factor.
Agreed.
I did see some fun little memes, I think on Blue Sky that was like, so what we got with the Switch was like original, like TNG uniforms. Mm-hmm. And what we're getting with the Switch 2 is DS9 uniforms.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really clever and very fun. But we don't have enough information yet in terms of how it's going to run the software, obviously. All we've got is the form factor, so we have to be patient for a full Nintendo Direct on April 2nd, and of course those hands-on public events throughout April and May.
Which registration is open for if you happen to be in one of the cities where those are taking place. What we don't know yet is a release date. I'm sure we'll find that out probably in that April Nintendo Direct.
We are speculating either a summer or fall release.
Yep.
If they're going to do the summer, it will likely be June prior to Summer Game Mess, or around Summer Game Mess. If they're going to do fall, it'll likely be September.
Yep, I agree. I think what's interesting to me, and the one thing that I don't know for sure, and I hope that they account for, is not just playing old software, but boosting old software. Because
sure.
There are games like Hyrule Warriors, Age of Calamity, Persona 5 Strikers, Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, which don't run terribly well on the existing Switch hardware, even in docked mode.
Indeed.
What I really want them to do is not just enable that software, but also to boost it automatically without a patch. I mean, a patch maybe, whatever. But I just want them to make it work and make those games work the way people hoped they would on the original Switch.
And it may be that there is very little that they have to do, that the developers, mm-hmm. rather, have to do in order to ensure that their games are optimized for the incoming hardware. Again, all we can do is cross our fingers at this point. But honestly, this is good news.
This is very good news.
This is good news.
Smart play.
This is good news for the industry at large. This is good news for indie developers. This is good news for everybody. This could potentially be the little boost that this industry needs. It's not going to fix anything.
I know
there
that
are still so many broken systems within video games.
Correct.
But this could be a balm.
Yes. I know that Matt Piscatella from Circana has been saying over and over and over again, we just need Nintendo to say something. We just need them to get the ball rolling. This could be a very, very good year for the industry if only because of Switch 2 and then GTA 6 later in the year, assuming that doesn't slip. Those two things alone are going to be a huge amount of revenue influx for the industry. Now, does that trickle down to indie developers? No, no, it doesn't.
It never does. Especially not if we're talking about AAA development. Now, the Switch very well could. The Switch was a boon for indie developers. If we think back to how they handled Nindies at the very beginning, you know, and how they have been fairly supportive having the Indie World Directs and everything like that. I think that that is something that they will continue because it's mutually beneficial. There are games that I played at the beginning of the Switch's life cycle, like a game like Pwned, right? Was developed by an indie team out in Europe. Lovely people. Absolutely lovely developers. I want to hear more success stories like Pwned for the Switch too. So my fingers are crossed for indies. We always want to see indies win. We always want to see game developers win. But all we can do right now is just cross our fingers and hope that this is going to be what we need.
Well, I also think that one of the things that I haven't seen a whole lot of people talk about, although I did mention it on Blue Sky, is that the decision to essentially make this an iterative release actually helps indie developers. They already know how to develop for the Switch. This, sure, there's going to be some new things that they need to account for. There's new hardware, right? But it is not going to be like going from a Game Boy Advance to a 3DS or 2D or a DS, where you suddenly have to program two screens. And, you know, it's not changing in such dramatic ways that developers are going to have to start from scratch. And I really, really
and that
think
gives, that gives developers a leg up. I mean, yeah, would it be nice if we had something that was just as weird as the original DS? Sure. It would be super cool if we did something that weird again. This is not the economy for it.
No, I do it through software, do it through accessories, do it through things like Ring Fit, do it through things like Labo. There is still opportunity for weird Nintendo to rear its head in the best way. Just this is the smartest, most logical, most business savvy, most consumer friendly approach that they could have taken. And it's developer friendly as well. Like I have nothing to criticize here. I am just excited to learn more.
Exactly.
Oh, the one other thing I do want to talk about since we're on the subject of Nintendo. You may have seen that there is a Nintendo Life decided to take it upon themselves to do something called a Better eShop.
Before we move into this, let us just remind each other and remind you, we do not eat our own in this family, in this house. You know, this is reasonable criticism. This is not about, you know, dragging people. This is reasonable criticism based on actions and outcomes.
Yep. The intentions here are good. I will say that to begin with. But when you have, what they've done is they've essentially created a layer on top of the eShop that people can use to purchase games. I don't know how secure that is, first of all. Second of all, they have enabled a way to label games as spam. Now, do not get me wrong. The eShop has a ton of shovelware. But right now, this thing has labeled literally every visual novel, games from legitimate developers who worked for years to release their games on Switch as spam, and they're hiding them from players. They built this thing in a week. They did not test it. They did not do any of the things that you do before releasing something like this. Again, good intentions only get you so far, but this is doing harm.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's pretty much all we want to say about that.
Yep. All right. Wow. We have three stories about the United States government. Jesus.
Specifically about the U.S. Listen, we know. We know. We're tired of it, too. We don't want to talk about the U.S. government.
I don't want to.
We live here.
I live here.
We live here. Mike's an American. I don't want to talk about it. I'm Canadian.
Derogatory.
Derogatory. But it's important for us to keep an eyeball on how America is treating different pieces of video games. Now, this very specifically is very much cracking down on China in two of our stories.
Well, and we don't even have the TikTok ban, which is slated to go into effect tomorrow. Although
when you all hear this, it will likely be Monday. So yesterday, I don't even know, who cares? Time is a flat circle. But the first thing that we do want to talk about today is how the U.S. government has designated Tencent as a Chinese military company. So in this sharp turn of events stemming from the incoming administration's executive order back in 2020, This prevented U.S. companies from investing in business entities with ties to the Chinese military. Tencent has been classified as Chinese military by the U.S. Department of Defense. All right. Not only does Tencent outright own Riot Games, they are heavily invested in many different gaming studios around the world, including a number located here in the United States. In addition to that, CATL is the biggest manufacturer of lithium-ion batteries.
Oh, man.
So this is, The Verge did an amazing story on this. So my suggestion is, if you want even deeper nuance, definitely go and take a look at how The Verge talked about this. But in their story, they did note that companies don't always stay on the list, as Chinese phone manufacturer Xiaomi was removed just months after it being added in 2021. Tencent spokesperson Danny Marty said in a statement to The Verge, "We are not a military company or supplier. Unlike sanctions or export controls, this listing has no impact on our business. We will nonetheless work with the Department of Defense to address any misunderstanding." Okay, this has the potential to have some serious impact on the way that Tencent does business in the gaming industry within the United States. And we are already being hit pretty hard by layoffs and layoffs and layoffs and layoffs here in the U.S. especially.
So just a reminder, Tencent owns 100% of Riot. They have a 40% stake in Epic.
Yep.
And they have their fingers in so many other companies.
Absolutely. And it's only gotten bigger and deeper since we started covering Tencent back in, what was it, like 2018?
I mean, I wrote that big piece after they bailed Ubisoft out. And stay tuned, we'll talk about Ubisoft later. After they bailed Ubisoft out when Ubisoft was under threat of hostile takeover from Vivendi.
I think that was like 2018.
I think it was as well.
I think it was 2018. So I think we've been talking about Tencent as a curiosity since 2018. And it has become more than a curiosity, obviously, because Tencent is so heavily invested in the United States and in the United States video game companies and, quite frankly, globally.
So we're not, I mean, this is yellow flag right now.
It's not a red flag yet, but it's definitely yellow flag. It has a lot of potential to do some serious harm, but all we can do for the now is sit tight and wait.
Yep. Moving on, the United States Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is asking for public comment on digital payments tied to large platform-style games like Roblox and Fortnite.
Interesting.
Yes. The purpose of the inquiry is to understand how financial privacy, data collection, and personalized pricing are impacting consumers. So right now, this isn't going to lead to any new rules at the CFPB, but it will instead guide what's called an interpretive ruling.
Okay.
This is really interesting stuff.
Interpretive ruling?
So there's an existing rule. In this case, it's the Electronic Fund Transfer Act.
Okay. I actually am familiar with that.
So we often talk about the law lagging behind technology.
Absolutely. We've been talking about this for years.
And it takes a lot to craft new rules and implement them.
100%.
However, if there is an existing rule which could be interpreted to apply to something new that has emerged in the technology world, it's an easier path. You're essentially expanding the umbrella of a rule to then create this coverage over a new area that isn't currently covered by the law.
Sure. Fair enough.
So in this case, the Electronic Fund Transfer Act could be interpreted to include digital payment vehicles like hard currencies, including Robux, V-Bucks, and any other currency that's required to make in-game real money transactions.
Interesting.
So they've been doing research on this type of financial transaction. They published a white paper in April 2024 called Banking in Video Games and Virtual Worlds. That's linked in the show notes.
Ooh, I think I want to read that.
Yeah. So the impetus is what the CFPB labels as, quote, a buyer beware approach that these companies have taken. In other words,
caveat emptor.
Yeah, exactly. In other words, you're responsible. Something goes wrong.
That's on you.
Yeah, it's on you. And the CFPB says, all right, these are becoming so prevalent that buyer beware just
isn't working.
Right. It isn't working. It isn't right. So
we keep waiting for video games to police themselves, and they're not.
No.
When was the last time we were in this? Oh, wait, we've been in this since the 90s, people.
Exactly. So what this would do if this interpretive ruling does, come into effect, would be that people who sell virtual currencies, so that would be like Roblox and Epic with Fortnite and lots of others.
Lots and lots of others.
They would then have to engage in robust consumer protections rather than just kind of have it company by company. So you might have a consumer bill of rights come out of this with with relation to it.
Well, that would be very interesting. I mean, I'm assuming here.
They didn't come right out and say that.
No, of course not.
But that's how these things typically emerge.
Sure, of course.
So the call for input is open through March 31st, 2025, and the CFPB is interested in the types of transactions consumers typically engage in, experiences that you might have had using in-game currency, particularly problems that you might have encountered or features that are not consumer-friendly. So if your account's been hacked, for instance, how have you dealt with that? How has customer support helped you? You know, what processes have you had to go through? We know it's really, really difficult to get an account back.
It really is. And like, I mean, our son went through mm-hmm. an account hack a couple years
ago
with Xbox Live. And thankfully, we were able to fix it. Mm-hmm. But that was really scary and very challenging.
It was.
Because that's Gabe's Minecraft account.
Exactly. And they also are looking for ideas about what protections consumers think should be in place to protect those transactions in digital in-game wallets.
That's fascinating. Yep. I think that that's really interesting that the U.S. government is finally like really, really taking an interest in how to help regulate a piece of the game industry that is just unregulated. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. All right, we got one more story here. Do you want me to take this or do you want to take this?
This is your story, so go ahead. Let's take us through it. I know COPA is normally my thing, but go for it.
All right. So last night, Manda flagged this. The US FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, has hit Genshin Impact developer Cognosphere. Why Cognosphere? That doesn't sound familiar, you say, because in the United States, they do business as HoYoverse.
Yep.
So it is the same company. They've been hit with a $20 million fine for alleged violations of child privacy laws and deceptive practices around the sale of loot boxes.
Oh, interesting.
Now, the United States has been very hesitant to do any regulation around loot boxes. We've seen it in Belgium and other territories in Europe.
Yeah.
But this is the first from the United States that is definitely having me cocking an eyebrow and wondering, are we about to see some big changes coming?
I have a feeling. Mm-hmm. I do have a feeling that there is more going on here than just about loot boxes, if you catch my drift.
I do catch your drift. So why don't you explain a little bit about COPA, because the next piece of this has to deal with COPA.
Sure. So the Child Online Privacy Protection Rule, which is known as COPA, it used to be ACT, but now it's rule. Yeah. COPA has been around for a number of years. Anytime that you sign up for a website that makes you say, I am over 13,
yeah,
that is the reason why that exists, you know, and it was because, you know, kids like me back in the 90s when I was a kid, you know, we were on the internet, right? The internet was a lawless place.
It was.
It was a weird place.
Kind of missed that.
It was a fun place, but it was also, you know, there were some really unscrupulous people that would take information about kids and do whatever they wanted with it.
I don't miss that part, just to be real clear. I just want to say that I miss parts of the weird web. I don't miss
part. Honestly, I miss the way forums used to be. That's what I'm going to say. So the Child Online Privacy Protection Act ensures that no one is gathering and storing data about children under the age of 13. Mm-hmm. That is the really important thing here to understand about COPA. You do not want to ever, ever get hit up by COPA, ever, because those fines are enormous and mm-hmm. they don't care. They are in the they are there to ensure that kids stay safe on mm-hmm. the internet. And yes, there is a lot of that is on parental responsibility, making, like, that's why Epic has cabined accounts now, is to ensure that they don't run afoul of COPA mm-hmm. any longer. You know, that's why we have a lot of these protections in place, to ensure that kids are able to be on the internet and still stay as relatively safe as possible. Yeah.
So apparently HoYoverse was collecting information from children under the age of 13. One remedy here is they're gonna have to delete any of that improperly collected information unless parents provide explicit affirmative consent for data retention. But
indeed,
that's not all that's happening here.
No. So the DOJ, you know, the Department of Justice, filed a complaint with the FTC that HoYoverse did not accurately disclose odds relating to pulling 5-star gacha prizes. And on top of that, they allegedly purposefully created a confusing system for its virtual currency that masked the real cost of opening these loot boxes.
You and I have talked about this over and over and over again about free-to-play games and the multiple currencies and the way that it creates distance between people spending real money and then spending the result of those purchases in-game. Indeed. There is that gap. You lose the sense of how much money you're actually spending in-game.
It's true.
That has long been my complaint about free-to-play games, long after the stigma kind of was removed from them. Free-to-play, you might not recall this, some of our listeners, but a decade ago, free-to-play games had such an ugly stigma in the United States that people would not touch them. The moment you found out it was free-to-play, it killed interest in it.
Well, and I think, I mean, as a nascent developer myself, there is a lot of stigma around working in mobile games to begin with.
Yes.
There is usually, and this is, I hate this because there are so many incredible writers out there that have worked on mobile games that can't break into the AAA space because they're like, oh, you just did mobile? Oh, that doesn't count. It's not real. So like, that's the kind of stigma that we're talking about here. So at any rate, free-to-play games have really improved and they've become less obtuse. I mean, I've been playing Infinity Nikki, and I don't find their currency system to be particularly confusing, but it is kind of onerous.
Yep.
Anyway, this is about Hoyuverse.
So, yeah.
So, also included in that complaint is that influencers were used to the tune of millions of dollars of sponsorship to market to kids, which the DOJ and FTC allege distorts the reality of getting those five-star pulls.
Yes. This one I'm really interested in because we've seen this before.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go back a decade and talk about the Counter-Strike Go gambling.
Oh, man. You mean when I fall in love with your writing for the first time?
Aw. So the two creators that were involved, Syndicate and T. Martin, they owned and ran Counter-Strike gambling sites. They put their thumb on the scale, changed the odds, and made it seem like that the odds were better than they were. They were winning more than the average person could. They were playing with house money.
They were playing with house money. I was really hoping you were going to say that, because I'm sitting over here, I'm just like, it's the money.
Yes.
The money. They wanted to personally enrich themselves.
Yep. So they weren't actually gambling anything.
They weren't gambling anything because they were able to, they turned something that is, you know, obfuscated, that is opaque, and to them it was transparent. They were able to just turn these gambling experiences into something that's more WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get.
Yep. So what's interesting here is I am unclear how they are getting from the use of influencers to distorting the reality of getting five-star pulls. That I'm not clear about. The fact that they've come to that conclusion, though, and it is part of this settlement, is the thing that is alarming to me, because it means that anybody who is an influencer working potentially on a free-to-play, working on a free-to-play game sponsorship, or if you are, you know, the company who runs that free-to-play game sponsorship and you're working with influencers, you have to be even more careful now. And you had to be careful to begin with, but you have to be extremely careful now, because now
you don't
want to
fall afoul. Yeah, you don't want to fall afoul of the FTC. They have long and strong arms.
Yep. Additionally, Hoyuverse will not be allowed to sell loot boxes to minors under the age of 16 without explicit parental permission. This is a new precedent.
It is. And I actually really like this. Mm-hmm. I think that this is really smart. And I think that this is something that could potentially, that is going to have longer reaching ramifications in a very positive sense for the consumer, and potentially a not so positive sense for the developers that have put together, quite frankly, these unscrupulous practices.
Indeed. Also, and this is going to send a tidal wave through any game that has transactions in the game for loot boxes, random pulls.
Yeah.
Right? I don't think this will apply necessarily to what you see is what you get, although you never know.
I like the WYSIWYG. If I'm going to do it, I want to know what I'm doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I'm wondering, because of the obfuscation of I buy X amount of V-Bucks and then I spend those V-Bucks on a skin or a backpack or back bling or...
But here's
the thing.
Yeah.
Moving, your Hoyoverse will need to implement a way to purchase loot boxes directly with real money, cutting out that hard currency in game. This is absolutely huge.
It's very big. I think that they're that if you are gonna have loot boxes in your game, and you are gonna obfuscate the odds, and you are going to do things like gacha pulls, I know that they're super popular. Mm-hmm. I personally don't like them. I find them frustrating because I don't like gambling in general. It's mm-hmm. not really my vibe. But I think this is really great in the sense that you are no longer going to have that obfuscation around how much this actually costs. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, HoYoVerse is going to have to delete any improperly collected personal information collected from children under the age of 13 unless parents provide consent for data retention.
Yep.
I can't imagine there are many parents out there that are going to say, like, yeah, keep my 10-year-old's information.
Mm-hmm. I am very interested to see how this ripples out. I mean, I think that if you look at what they're talking about right now, how does this impact EA and Ultimate Team? How does this impact 2K and my team? How does this impact Pokemon TCG Pocket? Because I've been playing this a lot. I really enjoy it, and I love opening packs. I've not spent a single dollar on it.
Okay.
Well, that's not true. I bought the premium pass, which gets me an extra pack to open a day. That's fine. But in order to... So here's the thing you can do in that game, though. You can buy gold in the game. The mm-hmm. gold can then be used to buy things like hourglasses, which enable you to open packs
uh-huh.
earlier.
Uh-huh.
So we've got multiple layers of currency here. I'm curious how this is all going to impact.
Yeah. And I think it has far-reaching effects, just in general. Like, around this time last year, I was giving Monopoly Go a shot. They've mm-hmm. got multiple in-game currencies, too. So, like, these virtual economies, I worked it in. These virtual economies are going to have to shift and change as a result of this, mm-hmm. more than likely, especially if we're talking about, you know, this precedent of having to purchase loot boxes directly with real money. I mean,
The interesting thing will be to see if it chills. Because if it does, then it actually proves the psychological... I mean, I think we all know...
We do.
That's why you purchase hard currency in games, because it does create that distance.
It does.
But I'm curious to see what the impacts are going to be and how far-reaching this decision is going to ripple out and touch some of the biggest in-game loot box style purchases.
Yep. Agreed. All right. And with that, we're going to move on into investment interlude, where we talk about, you know, money things.
And money things?
And more money things.
Money things!
Amazing. I figured I'd throw Mike off his game, but it didn't work.
Didn't work!
No, he's loaded for bear today, folks. So, hey, Mike, remember when Annapurna Interactive blew up last year?
I do remember that.
Hey, remember when Private Division offloaded big chunks of their portfolio before Take-Two sold them off?
I remember distinctly looking at you and saying, huh, what do you think's going on here? And you said...
Hey, I think that this is probably private equity.
Uh-huh.
Hey, we've got an update.
Uh-huh.
All right. Former staffers from Annapurna Interactive will be taking over Private Division's portfolio in a brand new, currently unnamed company.
And this comes by way of a Bloomberg report.
Indeed. So remember, Mike was just talking about this. We speculated that Private Division had been purchased by private equity, as there was no announcement of who the buyer was going to be. You're not going to do that if you sold your portfolio to another publisher.
No, it would be a two-part announcement.
It would be, because people would be crowing about it. But mm-hmm. there was nothing to crow about here because, as it turns out, we were right. Haveli Investments, which was founded in 2022 and located in Austin, Texas, is that company. Haveli has also invested in a mobile gaming company called Candyvore and has a minority stake in Behavior Interactive as well.
Mm-hmm.
According to Bloomberg, Haveli took on Private Division's 20 employees, some of whom will be getting laid off as part of the quote-unquote arrangement. Leadership at Private Division is being transparent about that, and they want their staff to take care of themselves and not wait. They are encouraging staff to look at other opportunities.
Yeah, so this is an interesting thing where you've got the team that quit Annapurna Interactive.
Yeah, they dipped and they're like, we're not doing this anymore.
And they had been trying to found their own company.
Indeed.
And there was originally going to be part ownership by Annapurna, and then there was like a big falling out. But that
those
left
talks
this,
broke down.
That left this great team without a portfolio. Well, suddenly now they got Private Division's portfolio minus No Rest for the Wicked, which is either staying with 2K or potentially reverting to Moon Studios.
Indeed.
But this includes a Game Freak title that they're working on, and a number of other things, and some additional things in the pipeline. Full disclosure, my company, for my full time job, has worked with Private Division. We've got a great relationship with Private Division. My hope, for the folks that I work with, that they actually land on their feet and that things end up well for them. But this is an interesting development. But
not an unexpected one, quite frankly. The only unexpected piece here was Annapurna Interactive. The former staffers from Annapurna Interactive, quite frankly. I did not see that coming.
Oh, I said it to you in the kitchen that day.
Yeah, but that was, I don't know. I didn't quite believe you. I didn't quite believe you on that one.
That's right, folks. Mike gets a gold star.
He does. Normally, I do the weird predictions that come true, but Mike actually called this one. We both did,
because you called the PE stuff.
Well, I mean, it couldn't be anything else, frankly.
The funny thing was, I even called the PE firm.
You did, actually. That's true. When we finished talking about it, you're just like, hey, what if it's Haveli? And I'm just like, what? That would be a shocking turn of events, but also not shocking at the same time. They are still, look, we could go back and forth about this all day. Mike and I are just smiling at each other, being like, sometimes we do things and they're right.
Yeah, how about that?
I would love to say that I love being right, but I actually don't.
Yeah.
I'm so tired especially of being lately. Right.
I would like to live in boring times where I am wrong about terrible things.
Please, can I live in precedented times? I beg you.
Yes. Next up, Ubisoft. In a world of hurt right now, and things are likely going to get very interesting before this quarter and their fiscal year, which ends on March 31st, is out. Assassin's Creed Shadows has been delayed out of February's heavy traffic until March 20th. And while this is likely a smart move to give the important release some breathing room, other aspects of the announcement are a little bit alarming. Ubisoft says that it has engaged advisors to, quote, review and pursue various transformational, strategic, and capitalistic options to extract the best value for shareholders. Man, I woke up...
Stakeholders.
Oh, right. Yeah, stakeholders. I woke up this morning and I thought to myself, my goal in this industry is to pursue various transformational, strategic, and capitalistic options.
Wow. Even in business, that's what you want.
That's what you want. Capitalistic options.
Capitalistic options and transformational strategic.
Like, I'm going to put that as my LinkedIn. Options. I'm going to put this as my LinkedIn.
Oh my God. The business word salad of that whole situation. And listen, Mike and I are obviously both business people at our core. But at the same time, it's like, y'all, you're not fooling anyone here.
No.
You're just looking for more ways to make more money.
Yes. Or at least not lose more money.
Well, so, okay,
and
fair
we'll
enough.
Talk about that in a second. So yes, while the statement does say stakeholders, it really
it's
does
not
seem
about
like
employees.
They are talking about shareholders and investors and not employees.
Shareholder value.
Oh, the other thing is I woke up 2 days ago and I said, what I'd really like to do with my life? Return value to shareholders.
That's, it's all you ever want to hear. I like when you were a little baby and you were in... getting your graduate degree.
No, when I was in elementary school, like my best friend wanted to be a scientist, and I had someone else who wanted to be an astronaut, and I stood up in the front of my third grade class and said, all I want to do with my life is return value to shareholders. I just want...
Just a round of applause for little Mikey.
Yeah. If my name were David, they would call me David Dividend.
That's pretty good.
That's right, but instead it's just Mike Moolah.
Mike Moolah. Yeah, except that not so much.
No,
not so much. That's not what we're about. We are here to demystify business and also make fun of the stuff that is just utterly ridiculous, like whatever that word salad was.
Yes. And by the way, if I ever wake up in the morning and say, I just want to return value to shareholders today, would you please hire an unalive service to come and visit me?
That's a $250 problem.
It's a $250 problem here in New Jersey.
You gotta get See, it. And I slipped into my bastardized... You gotta tip
them with some gabagool, some mutts.
I am not saying that.
Yeah, some prosciutto.
That's not happening. Hey. No.
No.
Bad Mikey.
No?
No.
That's right. They call me the gabagool. I come at night and I spook you.
I don't... That was just for Greg. Honestly, that was just for Greg.
this week, Insider Gaming also reported that Tencent has backed out of an in-progress deal to bail Ubisoft out. That may or may not be true. It was a fairly comprehensive report, and it's interesting to see that floating out there. We know that those conversations had reportedly hit the skids because the Guillemot family wants to remain in control.
Yep.
Shares of Ubisoft stock have decreased 85% since pandemic peaks.
Yo.
This week, Bloomberg published a new report indicating that the Guillemot family and Tencent are still in conversation, though, and may create a new business that would include some of Ubisoft properties. You know, Rayman and Friends, Ezio and Friends.
That's terrible. You got, no more
Skull
talk.
And
no.
Bones and Friends.
There's no one that wants to be friends with Skull and Bones.
And where the F is Beyond Good and Evil 2 and Friends.
I mean, maybe we'll see it this year. Fozzie's taken over.
Yes, that
so
game is
like,
supposedly still in development.
Fozzie Mesmer is pretty amazing, so we'll keep an eye on that. But anyway.
Yeah, so the goal of these conversations would be to satisfy both parties' interests. Tencent wants to gain more control. The Guillemot family still wants to have a controlling interest. I don't know how you square that circle, but we'll see. This did boost shares a little bit, but the ground is so shaky underneath the French company. It does seem to be scrambling for a ladder out of the hole it's dug itself, using shovels made of toxic culture, sexual harassment, and mismanagement.
Oh, that's so exciting.
That's so good.
It's so great. We love to see big toxic companies fail. However, we don't want their people to suffer.
No, there's a lot of people employed
at
Ubisoft.
A lot of good people specifically employed at Microsoft. Okay, and that
Ubisoft.
Is... Sorry, Ubisoft.
Oh, speaking of which, should we talk about, do we put Microsoft in here as well on the bottom thing?
I don't know. Did
we? Oh, yeah, we did. We did. Okay, good.
Okay, I'm pretty sure we did.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember. Okay, speaking of investments, we're gonna do a little detour and talk about divestments in this little special edition of Divestment Interlude.
If you see a faded sign at the side of the road, it says, I want to sell some stuff because I need some money.
You know, eventually we'll get back to doing this like live streaming where you can see us and have a conversation.
Nobody needs to see me dance like that.
I was dancing. It looked really silly.
It was very silly.
I just really like being silly. Okay. So we've got a couple of stories here in Divestment and Interlude. So Maximum Entertainment, which went through a big reorganization last year, has spun off its Merge Games label. That reorg cost Merge Games all but two of its employees.
Oi.
That's a lot. Silver Lining Interactive, which is based in the UK, is acquiring the IP and retail stock for approximately 90 of Merge Games' IP. Maximum will still retain the rights for certain elements of Merge's catalog, including Smalland, Bramble, Morbid, Pixel Shire, and Sunnyside. The deal is worth £1 million, I guess?
Euro.
Euro? Sorry, Euro. You're right. Which is $1.02 million.
And wrapping up Divestment Interlude and Investment Interlude, Jar of Sparks, which is originally funded by NetEase, is halting work as NetEase has pulled its funding support. We are seeing this. Tencent, NetEase, a number of Asian companies that made investments in the
West. It's more specifically NetEase. Like, NetEase has done this a number of times.
Yep. Jar of Sparks was founded in 2022. It's headed up by former Halo Infinite and Destiny 2 alumni Jerry Hook. And this is just the latest in a series of NetEase funding foibles as Worlds Untold, which was headed by BioWare vet Mac Walters, went through something incredibly similar last year. So we're not going to actively speculate on whether or not this is related to the FAFO award we gave NetEase last year. It certainly makes you think.
It sure does make you think.
Things that
indeed.
Make you go,
Oh, we're just going for it today,
oh,
are we?
Oh,
are we going for it? But while we go for it, it's time for a break.
Virtual Economy is an F-Squared initiative, and along with pro bono business consulting for up-and-coming developers, it's a way we are working to give back to the community that has already given us so much. To find out more about F-Squared and the services we can provide, including pitch prep, media training, mock reviews, and business strategy guidance, visit our website at fsquared.biz.
And we are back. Hey, Mike.
Yes.
What time is it?
It's time for quick hits.
It sure is.
The first of the year.
Kick us off.
So PlayOn CEO Klemens Kondratits has announced he is stepping down from the company. PlayOn was founded as, oh, thank God, I'm so happy, Koch Media. You want to give it a try?
No.
You sure? You don't
yes.
want to feel it rumble in your throat?
I really don't.
You don't want the Koch in your throat?
Mike!
What?
Mike!
We just made people very happy.
I know.
You know how much people love when I go overboard and you tell me to bring it back.
Yeah, it's going to be really funny when we turn this table on its head at some point and I go overboard and you have to pull me back.
Yeah. So are you sure you don't want to give it a try?
I'm sure.
You don't want to choke on the Koch?
Enough.
You know, Koch and a smile.
That's enough. Okay, seriously, we have to move on. We have to move on. Anyway,
we don't want to go sailing on a Koch Media. Stop it. So PlayOn was founded as, one more time, Koch Media.
Koch.
Yeah. Oh, that one got stuck in your throat.
It's because I'm laughing too much.
You got to hydrate, hon.
I don't buy my water bottle.
Open your throat and hydrate.
Stop it.
That's how you get the Koch out.
Anyway, 31 years ago.
He whipped his Koch out.
Enough. Enough. Oh my God. We are. This is the season premiere, you absolute.
Look, we got to give the people what they want, and they want more Koch.
Okay, former Square Enix executive and current Embracer Group deputy CEO Phil Rogers.
Whole company of Kochs.
Will be stepping into the role.
Koch.
I know you're done.
I'm never going to be done.
Okay, all right, and scene.
You've seen the Koch?
I have. Moving on. No.
Koch.
No.
When it opened no. down the road, I saw the Koch.
I don't even... Do I keep that?
Yes.
I probably keep that. Yes. Bloomberg broke the news that Sony has canceled two more live service projects.
And this is why the episode is called On a Live Service.
Oh, you're explaining the joke.
I know.
One was in development at Days Gone developer Sony Bend. The other was a God of War game in development at Bluepoint, which is a studio best known for the excellent care it has taken on a number of remasters and remakes, most recently Demon's Souls. Live service? God of War?
Pre-order now for the exclusive boy emote.
I don't even know what that would look like. Is it just like arena fighting? Like,
I don't know.
You're just, you inhabit, like, you just want to kick the crap out of Baldur some more? Like,
I don't know.
What's the deal here? Sony says it's hoping to minimize the impact of the cancellations on staff and that the studios themselves will not close.
That's good.
Okay, it's only good insofar as they actually make good on it.
I mean,
we're marking this now. I don't believe that Sony Bend is in trouble. I don't believe that Bluepoint's in trouble. But
yeah,
I mean,
this is also not the right thing to use Bluepoint on. I mean, Bluepoint.
I don't trust Totoki. I just don't trust him.
No.
You don't put a CFO in a CEO role. I'm sorry.
The dude has more... It's Totoki Literature Club. The dude's got a lot of blood on his hands.
Oh! You haven't even played that game.
I know, but I'm aware.
That's awful.
I am tuned in. I am with you, fellow kids.
Okay, old... let's get on to milestones, I guess.
Capcom's Resident Evil 4 remake has hit 9 million units sold.
Listen, that's nothing. Stardew Valley has sold a whopping 41 million units.
Hitman, World of Assassination has reached 75 million players across the trilogy.
I'm sorry, I read that as World as Fuck Assassination. Because it says AF and
I am with
OF.
You, kids, so that's a typo. As you are, as longtime listeners will be aware, I type very quickly when I'm doing show notes, and sometimes funny typos slip in.
They're my favorite. I love them.
The World is Fuck Assassination. I would play that game. IO Interactive, get the frick on that.
That's hilarious.
I am Agent 47. I am here to call.
I'm gonna don't imagine? No.
Hold on. I once in that game threw an apple at somebody and beaned them in the head. I can imagine what World is Fuck Assassination, what I could throw and bean people in the head with and kill them.
This is not Saints Row. This is not Saints Row.
I bet Agent 47 has dual wielding penetrators.
Bad Mikey.
You know who released, who was behind Saints Row, right?
I'm familiar.
What studio was it?
No.
Come on.
No.
Do it.
I'm not.
Do it.
No. I mean, you can't make me.
It was Deep Silver. Do you know who owned Deep Silver, right? I'm wiggling my eyebrows, folks. I'm wiggling them.
We're moving on. Awesome Games Done Quick took place last week and raised more than $2.5 million for the Prevent Cancer Foundation. Awesome Games Done Quick is great. I love that event. It's so cool. I don't tend to watch a lot of speedrunning stuff, but I always enjoy Awesome Games Done Quick.
All right.
And with that...
And those were Koch hits.
Damn it, Mike!
I'm sorry, it should have been Quochits.
Enough. Okay, we have to take a step back now from the silliness because we now have the labor report.
And folks, I cannot believe
it is so ugly.
It is a fucking bloodbath.
It is so ugly out there right now. So if you need to leave us here, that's okay. We understand. We'll see you on the next episode. But for those of you that are, you know, going to wade into the horrible waters that is the labor report, let's get to it. Rocksteady has been hit with yet another round of layoffs. In a not so great before the holidays decision, they laid off half a dozen staff members. Those affected are mostly programmers, artists, and yes, QA. The last round of layoffs exclusively cut QA folks. One of the people affected actually found out while they were on paternity leave.
And I know that every time this happens, we hear, but isn't that illegal? And it is illegal to fire an individual while they are on Family Medical Leave Act.
But
well, also, this is in the UK. But in the US, it's illegal to fire an individual while they're on Family Medical Leave Act. But if they are part of a layoff, it's not illegal.
Yep. Super cool. Love that. So cool.
And if you think labor protections in the United States are going to get better,
you're wrong. You are wrong.
It's about to get worse.
Yeah. We took a look at that budget last night. Oh, boy.
Yep.
Oh, boy.
Netmarble reportedly made some cuts very early this year, potentially clocking in the first layoffs of 2025. And as you'll see through the rest of this, not the last.
No.
The news comes from Korean outlet YNA by way of Insider Gaming, which suggests that 25% of the 80-person team working on Netmarble's Demis Reborn have been laid off.
Cloud Imperium Games' upper management has been shuffled and restructured in order to, quote, hit its deadlines.
Oh, wait, hold on a second. Star Citizen has deadlines? That thing was funded in 2012. It's been 13 years. It's been 13 years.
Vivi turns 13 this year.
Well, we just broke Amanda.
No!
Hold on.
Guys, Okay, I'm fine. I'm cool. According to Insider Gaming, quote, several top-level executives have been laid off and other top people at the company have been shifted to different roles, including Chief Strategy Officer Carl Jones, who had been at the company for 10 years and is no longer there. In November of 2024, Cloud Imperium Games has done what many other myopic studios have done. They got rid of a chunk of their QA staff. Yeah. Hey, you know what makes games go? QA.
You know what?
Do you know how I know that? I work on games.
Yeah. GameStop has quietly closed even more stores, with the death count now at 1,000 locations since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. Reddit posts seem to point to approximately 300 closures in the waning weeks of 2024.
So great. Free Jam, the studio behind RoboCraft 2, has shut down. The studio has already shut down RoboCraft 2, which was in early access, and plans to sunset the original RoboCraft and another game, Card Life, in the future. RoboCraft 2 has already been delisted on Steam. Okay, normally I don't do this in the middle of a show because we save this for questions. I'm gonna give you a little bit of advice here if you are looking to run a multiplayer game. Server costs can be brutal if you're not receiving additional financing for it. So a little word of advice for folks looking to create multiplayer games. Budget very, very much extra for maintenance costs and potential overages. Server costs can seriously bankrupt a studio if your studio doesn't have the means on a regular basis to maintain those server costs.
And additionally, if your game is successful and you think about taking a deal from Game Pass or PlayStation Plus, you've got to ask them how many people they expect to take advantage of that, because those people flooding your servers could make the expense higher than the payout you get from being part of that program.
Correct. We know that because we've been in the middle of some of those negotiations.
Yep. All right, this one cuts me deep.
I know. Splash, I'm so sorry, Mikey.
Yeah, I'm sad about this. Splash Damage is undergoing significant layoffs and a reorganization following the cancellation of Transformers Reactivate. Longtime listeners will know why this one cuts me deep. I'm a huge, huge, huge Transformers fan. But more importantly, this marks another major UK studio that's forced to undergo cuts that leave a number of people out of work in the worst labor environment this industry has ever seen. I am deeply, deeply concerned about the UK game industry.
Yeah. It's really, really bad out there, folks.
Yep.
Toadman Interactive was closed down by their parent company, which is technically Daybreak, but it is also EG7.
Yep.
On January 10th. Their most recent game, Evil vs. Evil, which we need to disclose that we consulted on very briefly, didn't do well enough for their parent company, Enad Global 7 or EG7, to keep them going on that alone. Now, Toadman is not just known for their original IP. They have done quite a bit of co-development over the years, including on Vermintide, which is a beloved game in this household. Mm-hmm. And they just haven't been able to secure enough of that contract work to keep the studio open. They will honor their current co-development contracts, but will be entirely closed in the back half of this year.
Microsoft has announced it's conducting a round of layoffs that it is called small, in quotes. The cuts are going to impact the video game unit as well as security and sales, and it's unclear what Microsoft considers to be, quote, small after laying off 1,900 people last year at this time. Microsoft also laid off 10,000 people in early 2023, and Microsoft, along with Meta, have recently announced, very close to one another, that they're going to be doing another round of cuts for, quote, underperformers.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is a really, really shitty thing to announce because it makes it hard for people who are caught up in that round of layoffs to get unemployment benefits.
Yep.
Because it seems like it's for cause.
Yep.
It's really shitty.
Yep. It's really bad. And we have said this many times on this show, and we will say it many more times. We don't stand corporations in this house, and we knew that the goodwill with Microsoft was only going to last as long as they were, as it was only going to last as long as it was going to last, right? Where they had positive mm-hmm. consumer sentiment. They no longer have that. They no longer have that. And they certainly don't have industry trust at this point either. All right. VR studio Soul Assembly has announced that it is laying off 15% of its staff. Soul Assembly is behind Warhammer 40K Battle Sister and other such titles. The studio had more than 70 employees 2 years ago, which would put these cuts in the neighborhood of about 10 or 11 people.
Moving on from layoffs, we have a couple of more positive pieces of news. Square Enix has announced a new policy to protect employees from harassment.
Oh, I love this.
It's a line in the sand that's a warning shot to toxic players. Should players engage in harassment of employees or company partners, that they may find their access to services completely cut off. In other words, the ban hammer is going to drop in a way that it hasn't before.
I love this.
Yep.
I love this a lot.
Square Enix is signaling that it is prepared to take legal action against offenders, similar to how Bungie pursued a serial harasser through the court system.
Do they have Dawn?
I don't know, but it would
Dawn, be- if you listen to our podcast, email us.
Yes. Get them.
Get them.
The list of offenses includes acts of violence, sexual harassment, personal attacks via email, contact forms and internet comments, trespassing, so don't show up at the office and be a dick, and discrimination. Additionally, Square Enix lists, quote, unreasonable changes or exchange, unreasonable requests for changes or exchange of product or requests for monetary compensation, and unreasonable requests for apology, including face-to-face responses, and, quote, unreasonable and excessive demands for punishment of employees, in other words, calling for people to be fired, are reasons to pursue remedy under this policy. So I just want to use it as an example. We have seen that a certain segment of the very vocal, very alt-right-leaning community, if you can call it that, has used going to employers because they don't like what an employee has done.
Or said on social media.
That would then trigger this policy. If you are conducting a harassment campaign...
Buck around, find out.
Yep.
We have been waiting for this stance for so many years.
Yep, but we need other companies to do this. Because here's the thing. The Final Fantasy 14 community...
is pretty wholesome.
It's pretty wholesome. Like, they're pretty good people. Like, we don't usually see this kind of thing the way you see it in WoW. Or you see it in Call of Duty. Or you see it in online sports games. Like, I want to see other publishers step up and protect their employees like this. This should be the norm, not the exception.
Agreed. 100% agreed. And another piece of, well, I don't know if I want to call it good news, but I do want to call it labor positive news. STJV, an independent game worker union in France, has put the word out to Don't Nod staff to, quote, enact an extended strike.
Hot damn.
The strike was approved by 90% of Don't Nod's workers. This, quote, renewable strike was set to begin on January 13th after Don't Nod announced plans to cut 69 jobs in October of last year.
Not nice.
Not nice.
Not nice.
This is according to Game Developer. Again, this is a great story, so you should go read the full story if you want even more nuance. In response, it was STJV. Yeah, I said that right.
You said it right.
STJV claimed studio management was making employees pay for their crass ineptitude while also stifling the union's ability to negotiate effectively by reducing time limits and resources to the bare legal minimum. The union implored management to engage with employee representatives and initially called for a walkout. So this is what they want. I'm going to read out what the union is looking for. What we want. We demand that the company's management respond to and discuss each of the points raised in the open letter together with all the employees. We demand that the company's management immediately abandon this irresponsible and unfair layoff plan. We demand that the employees who are the most competent be given a say in all decision-making. We demand that Oscar Gilbert take part in negotiations and assume his responsibilities as CEO.
Damn.
Huge. Amazing.
They're demanding a face-to-face.
Iconic.
Yep.
It's huge. This is what labor unions are here for, and this is why we need more discipline-focused labor unions across this industry. SDJV claims studio leaders are only interested in stalling for time, and they are not taking any negotiations seriously. And I, for one, really hope that Don't Nod's staff take him to church, so to speak.
We did it.
We did it.
Season premiere in the can.
We did it. It's a beautiful thing. And we're clocking in at just over an hour.
Wow, go us. That was a lot of show notes for an hour.
That's a lot of show notes for an hour. It's because we spent quite a bit of time talking about the Switch and talking about, you know, some of our top stories. But we're glad to be back.
Yep, absolutely.
And we will be back in the swing of things. So you will see us again in another couple of weeks.
So thank you for listening to the Virtual Economy Podcast. You can follow us on Blue Sky at Virtual Econcast. Wait, that's not right.
It's follow us on Blue Sky. We are virtual economy.bsky.social.
Yeah,
but I am Ritual Magic.
Yeah, I'm losing my mind. Help, can you find it? Oh, shoot. It's there. There it is. It's with my koch.
Oh, Jesus. So I'm Ritual Magic with a W at the beginning.
Yes.
That's it. That's all I'm going to do. Mike will spell his now.
Yep. I am at footerish.bsky.social. That's F-U-T-T-E-R-I-S-H. We also post the show on LinkedIn, on the F Squared account, and our personal accounts.
Absolutely. You can subscribe to our RSS feed at virtualeconcast.com. That's also a great place to go and check out our trends piece.
Yes.
Which we do every single year. So we took a look back at 2024 and a look ahead to 2025, in which case I got very acerbic and snarky. And if you don't want to listen to the show directly on our website, you can listen to us on all major podcasting platforms, including Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Amazon Pocket Cast, and I always forget this last
Pocket
one.
Sand!
Ah, my eyes. Ah, it's horrible. The first Pocket Sand is always the worst.
Yeah, just washed it out of your eyes, finally.
Ugh, gross.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all gritty now. Yeah. Not to be confused with leftist meme mascot gritty.
Yes.
So please subscribe if you enjoyed our shenanigans and our analysis, and if possible, review the show on your platform of choice. We always want to know what you think.
You can always DM us with questions. We love listener questions. You can also send them via email to podcast@fsquared.biz. We have an amazing community on Discord. You are welcome to come and join us.
It's very lively. And you can just lurk. Lurk most of the time because I don't have a lot of time during the day to engage because I'm constantly running around to my three different gigs at the same time. Mm. But it is a wonderful community. The people are super, super nice. We've got great community managers that are unofficial community managers. They're just lovely people.
Well, and we have official.
We've got Greg. We've got Greg. Greg is our official community manager over at the F Squared Haven, as it is known. And with that, we will be back in a couple of weeks. So in the meantime, remember to wash your hands, stay hydrated, and be good to one another.
We'll see you soon.